Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, everybody. This is Preston Schlankhofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer. Anyways, I'm with our good friend, Bjorn Simonsen, and we're on video today. For those of you who will be able to visit us on the YouTube channel, we have a new addition to that. So I don't have my normal intro with me, but because this is kind of a spur of the moment thing, but we wanted to get together with you and discuss a few things that are going on in the world. And so as always, Bjorn and I always have good convos. So I don't predict that it'll be any different today. Matter of fact, I think you will enjoy it. It's a combination of a variety of things. And by the way, as you can see, I'm not in the bunker today, but in my office. So just that little bit of change. But Bjorn, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio.
Good to see you, sir. Great to be here.
Yeah, yeah. So just give us a little brief highlight of what you're doing right now. Because, you know, we know that you're a businessman, an entrepreneur, and somebody who's always active. And so we want to get an idea of what you're doing right now. And you've got this presence coming that we should let everybody know about.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you again. I think this is our third time on the air together, something like that. And before, I think it was funny, I think we did our first show 18 months ago, 2 years ago, something like that.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about the, you know, the oncoming threat that, you know, the general public is completely blind to, right? And, hey, here we are. Check it out. Yeah, you got a non-zero chance of nuclear war. So Preston's so tough, he's in his office instead of his bunker when there's nuclear war on the news.
That's right.
Yeah. So I too am in my office and sitting there going like,
I ain't scared.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's like a friend of mine who built a bunker. I asked him once, and I was like, hey man, thanks for the beer, but what for? Like, what do you have this bunker for? You're going to like repopulate the planet on a scorched earth? I'm like, I don't know. This seems pretty hardcore. He's just like, someone's going to use it. I'm like, okay, fair enough. That's a good answer. But that all aside, right, so what I've personally been up to since then is I've becoming more and more involved as kind of an outside consulting-ish entity for the intelligence community, just because a lot of that group has a very, you know, entrenched military background and or big business, and they come together. I'm a part of what's called the InfraGuard community, which is the protection of the infrastructure of the country. And then specifically, I'm also part of the National Disaster Resilience Council. These are both volunteer efforts because I am concerned and I do care. I'm a dad, right? Before everything else, I'm a parent, you know? And I want my kids to have an earth to inhabit, right? So if you kind of prioritize your way of thinking in that regard, it kind of changes things. You know, I'm not going to go buy a red Porsche and go drive around and say, hey, I'm so cool. I mean, they are cool, don't get me wrong, but it's like at this point, I don't think that's my best use of time. And so as we were talking before the show, you know, there's a whole cadre of things that are happening, right? In rapid time too. Like it's unreal how fast things are unfolding. And so, like we were discussing before, certain things have been hitting my radar and awareness that I've been bringing up to my community of, you know, family and friends and that stuff. And as one of my buddies who's the CEO of a very successful company in the telecom world, he came up to me the other day. He's like, you know, the crazier the things that have come out of your mouth over the years that I thought were nuts and now I'm seeing on television, I'm listening. And I was like, cool, great. It's not actually theory. It's actually happening. It's just you got to be watching different data points because, you know, as you and I both know, if it's on TV, it's propaganda. Someone's paying for that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if you look at, you know, the modern news channels and just basically, I like to joke saying, I see what's on news, on the news, you know, if at a hotel or gas station or something like that, and I'll go, wow, that's really interesting. They're presenting it that way. And then just multiply by -1. That's probably true, you know? So as we've been going into these different things as far as national security and then infrastructure security, protecting the grid, I've kind of been growing that as far as, you know, my think tank is concerned, which is called moonshotworks.com. You can find it there. And that has morphed into, as you were hinting at, the big reveal is that I'm actually launching my own podcast, video podcast this year. At the URL that I just somehow was able to buy, which is my first name.co. So Bjorn.co, believe it or not, I bought it for like $11. So I was like, okay, I can't pass that up. You know, like, thanks, GoDaddy. Sick. All right, I'm going to have my own first name at .co. What are the chances of that? Okay, cool. Let's do that. Cool. And the purpose of that one is to, like I just said, you know, as we, I'm sure this is happening to you too. There's a lot of people that are coming to guys like me just saying like, okay, this world is definitely different. I don't know what to do. Like, what's happening right now? Like, what do I do? And how do I take any sort of, how do I even wrap my head around what's going on? You've got, you know, an undefended border to our south, and then suddenly we care about someone else's border and we're, you know, like threatening nuclear war against everybody else in the world. And what? Like, how does that make any sense, for one? And then two, what else could be going on, you know, with the Russian-Ukrainian invasion? And then also, you know, like we were talking about before, you know, a couple weeks ago, it suddenly clicked for me. At about 3 o'clock in the morning, I started making a presentation about the fog of war and what you can hide underneath the surface. And because I was like, okay, everybody in the world is seeing like images of war on TV and Putin, you know, Putin this, Putin that, Putin this, Putin that, bad guy, bad guy, bad guy, bad guy, you know, black, white, left, right, you know, red, blue, it's all binary, right? But, you know, what I think is prudent for all of us to do is to remember to take a moment and press pause and try and play the other side of the chessboard, right? Clearly there's something going on. There's no denying that something massive is going on, but what is it, right? So if the news is completely dominated by one narrative, you know, it was COVID until Putin cured COVID by invading his neighbor. Right? I mean, think about it. It's true. Like, nobody talks about COVID anymore. Right. It's like, yeah. Right. Oh, okay. So now we're just going to go in this other direction.
Well, there's a few masks out there still. We were at Costco yesterday and there were still people out there with masks on. So it's the fear is still there.
Yeah.
But there's an added fear now, and that's the fear of war.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, if you then, like I said, you know, play the other side of the chessboard, what are, you know, why would they be taking moves that they're taking? Who else is in that group on the other side of that chessboard, for example?
Yeah.
And then try and flip it, you know, be the nerd in chess club back in third grade, right? I was, you know, like, let's look at what that has to do. And then you can say, I can see where we're being directed to conclude from our side of the pond, right? What are they thinking that it's going to make them take moves and for what motivations, right? That's, I mean, the rule number one of negotiation is to figure out what the motivations are on the other side of the table, right? I mean, business, hostage negotiations, you know, talking someone off a cliff because they're going to commit suicide. Like, you got to figure out what in the world is driving them to make these decisions. And it goes very much not just for, you know, territory annexation. I fully understand that narrative, right? I get that. But what else could, everybody else is focused on that, so I don't need to worry about it. Someone else is doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That said, what is under the surface is clearly economic warfare. It's called gray zone or asymmetric. And if you then, again, put it in that box on the other side of the table and say, hey, I'm just playing red six right now. I'm on the other side, okay? So don't jump to conclusions. I'm just trying to discover what in the world would motivate someone to be making these rash moves, right?
Mm-hmm.
It clearly has to do with dollar hegemony, right? So ever since Bretton Woods and then the OPEC oil crisis, the U.S. dollar has been the dominating currency in the world in what's called the petrodollar, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I have a barrel of oil, right, and I'm company or country X, in order to sell it to country Y, I have to transact it in dollars, which puts an inordinate amount of pressure on the dollar because an oil consuming nation has to get a lot of dollars, right, trading their mm-hmm. currency for the dollar bill itself to buy this thing so they can actually have it, right? So a presentation I gave 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago was, holy smokes, I get it. This thing has everything to do with breaking the petrodollar because other countries, again, on the other side of the chessboard, right, they see quite clearly that the dollar has been used, in their opinion, the dollar has been weaponized through sanctions via the SWIFT system. So the SWIFT is right. The international banking, you know, clearinghouse, so that I have a checking account and I can wire you money in wherever you are. That's done through the ACH automated clearinghouse via the SWIFT system. So the argument that I presented was that SWIFT blocking Russia was a trap and we fell for it because they had something already prepared and we walked right into it.
Yeah, you're right. It just seems like sometimes that happens. We have people that are moving the pieces around on our side of the chessboard that don't necessarily have yours and mine and the people's benefit in mind. I think they are, you know, I've called them globalists, and that's exactly what they do. They're trying to manipulate the global environment to their benefit and to and this is being proven out with Herr Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum and other people that have been talking about the Great Reset. And so I think there's good and bad coming from what we see in Ukraine. And some of the good is the bad actors on our side are being identified.
Yeah, I would not take the counter argument to what you just said. Definitely see where you're going with that. Circling back, you know, like, yes, there, it's always been that way. You know, I think that what you're touching on is important, super important, that, you know, human history in general, until really the democratic experiment we call the United States, has throughout history been one of a feudal society, right? Mm-hmm. It has been the king and then his lords, you know, who then are the only property owners, you know, and they're effectively owned by the king, right? And then if you mess with the king, he'll just whack your family and take your daughters and your wife and stuff. You have no rights, period. None.
Right.
And I think that what is what has been happening for 100 years, really, is the rebirth of a neo-feudalism movement, right, from a very, very close coordination of people who are printing these, right, to buy the companies that make the products that you and I buy, right?
Yeah.
And then they have sponsorships, if you will, you know, kind of like NASCAR, you know, like if I'm sponsored by Quaker State Motor Oil, I put the big sign on the side of the car.
That's right.
Right. But in the political sphere, they don't have to have their sponsorships on their jerseys. Maybe we should change that. I don't know. But
I think we should.
it's very much, you know, some people like to say, you know, like, oh, well, we live in a democratic society. I'm like, are you sure about that? Because if you really think about it, during COVID, I think it became very, you know, marked and very obvious that the little guy doesn't matter, you know?
No.
And they're saying, oh, it's capitalism is the problem. I'm like, actually, no, you got to think about that for a second. Capitalism is your mom and pop store, you know, or the side grocery store, or like an independent restaurant on the corner, you know?
Yeah.
That is, you know, let's say just for example, a husband and wife team, their dream is they've saved up for 15 years to have enough money to start their own taco stand. I don't care, whatever it is, you know? And now they're going to have their own independence and they are providing a service they're good at in exchange for you receiving that service that you're willing to pay them a little bit more money than it costs them to make it. And that is the right service they provide, right? I'm hungry, I'm on the go, I'm like trying to figure out where do I eat as I'm driving to San Francisco or something. Hey, mm-hmm. that place, it's got good reviews, I'm gonna go check it out. And suddenly, mm-hmm. oh, the reviews are great. You know, it's a great taco. That's capitalism, right?
Yeah.
And it's laissez-faire, it's, you know, freedom. What you're seeing now though was that, I mean, it's just overt. You know, the big businesses got bigger and did better. The little guy got crushed, straight up.
And it was by design, it seems like, because the big ones were like all the big box stores, you know, Costco, BJ's, and, you know, these others, they were allowed to stay open and sell everything, whereas the little guys were told, you gotta shut down.
Right.
My favorite taco stand, to stay on the subject there, you know, of dietary desires. My favorite taco restaurant in town here shut down because of COVID.
Sure.
It was the only place in miles that I could find good Mexican food that resembled what I got in South Texas.
There you go.
Everything else is Americanized Tex-Mex style stuff. And yeah, it's not the same. So right, they shut down. I mean, it was very unfortunate. Very unfortunate.
Well, I think where that kind of goes back on topic, right, is just it's just one of a million examples, right, where the right public itself is awakening to the fact that there has been something else been going on, right?
Right.
And it is, to your point, right, it is not in your favor, right? You are a serf in this position, right? You are not a landowner and wealthy, all this stuff. You are a serf with no rights in that mindset and that perspective, right? So where that goes is, this all kind of ties into a bigger thing, is that the public is seeing, not just in this country, but internationally, because of your smartphones, we can connect to people all over the world. I have friends in countries all over the world, right? You know, I was hanging out with one of my best friends who's from Peru, right? They escaped Peru, right? And he and I were talking, you know, wealth preservation in a hyperinflationary environment. And he's like, oh yeah, I've been through it 3 times. What you want is, you want small tradable things like cufflinks, good watches, you know, dollar bills, forget it. Trade them in for things that you can actually sell in the future. You know, like vintage cars. I'm a car guy, right? Like, or whatever. And he's like, smaller is better because you don't want to attract attention to yourself, because if you're grabbing attention, you're grabbing the wrong kind of attention, right? So
that's right.
This goes back to what we're talking about, is that, just for sake of argument, right, the US dollar is completely under attack and everybody knows it now, right? And it's like, I was seeing this for a long time. I studied economics in university, so I was like, you know, this fiat currency thing is not going to last forever. They're going to kick the can down as far as they can, and then they're going to lose control. And when they do lose control, you're going to see basically the value of your purchase price, your dollar, go like this, and cost of everything go like this. And then, and going back to the other side of the chessboard, we totally deserve it from the other guy's perspective, right? Because the standard of living we've had in the United States, because of the petrodollar, the other countries who are living in poverty because of the petrodollar are very much motivated to fix that and balance the power, right?
Yeah.
Of course they would, you know? So if you have that mindset from a, you know, just a human being to human being, you know, and you let compassion get in there instead of like, they're wrong and it's black and white and all that kind of stuff. You can totally understand why they would be doing that. But at the same time, how do we caution our loved ones against what's about to occur, because it's never happened in the United States for anybody who's alive, who's, you know, less than 100 years old, right? Yeah, so yeah. I think where we're going is something where it's going to be very serious. And I would encourage everybody to start reading up as fast as you can about the Great Depression, right? Because that's, there's a non-zero chance we're going into that. You know, definitely while you can, pick up this book, Unrestricted Warfare, which is by the People's Liberation Army of China, by Colonel Chao Ling. Sorry, I'm going to butcher their name pronunciation. I apologize in advance. But Chao Ling, I think, and Wang Xingshui, I guess?
Something like that. I couldn't say it either.
Yeah, and you can buy this, curiously, on Amazon. And they tell you everything they're going to do in here. And it includes asymmetric warfare, directed energy weapons, electromagnetic pulse weapons, gene warfare. Okay, that's a hot button topic.
Yeah, which may be what COVID was all about.
One could definitely make that argument and investigate accordingly, of course.
Yeah.
So I think it's high time that we, you know, start ringing the bell and stuff and saying, okay, if you're living in a hyperinflation environment, food costs are going to go vertical. Right. It's already happening. The Ukraine, nobody knows anything about the Ukraine over here, but Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe, right? They have a population, I think it's 40 million people, and the ability to grow food to feed 600 million people.
That sounds like California Central Valley, doesn't it?
Provided we have water.
Yeah.
Provided that's our another issue. Work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kind of on that topic, you know, like it, for us as the United States, we need to plan A for a weakening dollar, like at a rapid clip. Two, we also need to very much investigate and provide solutions, not at the federal level, but at the local level for energy production, independence, mm-hmm. energy produced locally, water produced locally, because without water, you die in 3 days. No ifs, ands, or buts. If you don't have a reliable water supply, you're done in 3 days. And that means civil chaos, right? And three, local food production. If you've got energy and water, you can grow food indoors, right? Aeroponic harvesting, aeroponic indoor farming uses 95% less water than any other form of farming. And then if you have that, now you can prevent unplanned urban to rural mass migration, which would be a devastating thing, because if think about it, like if our logistics shut down and now all of LA is like starving and looking for food, that's bad, right? So I think I'm just saying we need to open these conversations.
Yeah and those points are very valid that you've raised. The issue is I wouldn't say necessarily politicians, but politicians and bureaucrats at the local and county and state levels, those are the obstacles many times, because they don't want to do anything that's uncomfortable for them that isn't coming down from on high someplace else. You know, like when I was talking with the local emergency managers, trying to get their support for developing a civil defense organization within their jurisdiction, you know, all they saw was me trying to start a militia. They look at their information that comes from FEMA, and if it ain't on FEMA's list, they're not going to do it. So that's when I decided that it has to be a grassroots effort to start, you know, friend to friend, neighbor to neighbor, and build it up from the bottom up, and then coordinate with your local emergency manager and community leaders. That way they don't have a part in it. It's grassroots, it's yours, and you form it as preferably a nonprofit, and you build it up, and you're able to operate, and you start coordinating with them and working with them, but they don't have the ability to say no or shut you down, because you're going to do whatever you do no matter what. Just like the Cajun Navy going into Houston when they got spanked by the hurricanes. So you know, they went, the state tried saying, hey, you're not certified. Well, they went in anyways. And that's what you got to do. You know, you got to do what you got to do to help people out. And the best way to do that is grassroots.
Concur. Completely agree. Actually, it was, we were talking about this on the NDRC last week, is that, you know, my wife and I, and part of, you know, we were part of a church. It's no longer a church. It's a foundation, because the, you know, the persecution of Christians is definitely on the table, I think.
But oh, yeah.
That aside, yeah. You know, what we've been doing every week for, you know, 10 years, I guess, is we host a Friday night dinner, right? We observe the Sabbath, right? Which comes from the Jewish tradition, right? And it's a time where you put work down. Everybody knows, don't call me after 3 p.m. on a Friday, because I'm getting dinner ready for 20 people, right? And to your point, this is, you know, if you go back to like the Federalist Papers and stuff, those guys met in taverns, you know, they met over a beer. Yeah. And they passed their like compared notes. They're just like, what did you hear? Well, that's not true. I was there. That didn't happen like that. It happened like this, you know, and then they were able to compare notes. And the trouble we have is that, you know, big tech and social media are completely compromised, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I can tell you how they do it.
And it's media. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's for an agenda. So the agenda being the loss of sovereignty of the individual, right? So be it either from a rebirth of the Fourth Reich, as some people believe, or the totalitarian communist state. It's not socialist, it's communist for China.
Right. And it is.
And tricking people to think that socialism's okay. It's not. It's like, this is socialism. Hi, I need a soda. Thanks for your money. You know, like, and then they just take it. And then if you don't pay them, they shoot you. Like, that's what happens. You know, like, they didn't earn it. So kind of getting off topic here. But yeah, in the grassroots sense of things, being able to have people come into your house and say, hey, you want to, you know, can I make you a cocktail? And they're like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we have 10 pounds of steak on the barbecue and it's going to be ready in about 20 minutes. And they're like, what? You know, and that's what we do every week. And it has become its own momentum, where then the families that, you know, that you've been helpful for their marriage and for their family, and it's about getting back to the family, which
it is.
Communism wants to destroy the family. That's why there's all this anti-family push and stuff. It's all Satan's behind all of it. Just think of it that way.
And that's why they're destroying police also, because that's the bedrock of protection of the family and the neighborhoods.
Yep. And in the schools too, you know, like it's insane. So we have to get back to family, right? And working with other families to say, like, you're not alone. Yes, everything's breaking, but if we stick together, right, we'll get farther. And knowing who's got what and how to think through what would be a really bad day if we have a black swan event, right? You have a black sky event from an EMP. Oh boy, you better have your community tight, right? Because it is chaos and in 3 days, and you better know what you're doing, right? But that's a topic for another call.
Well, I already know what I'm going to do. I have everything right here. I have my community planned out.
Yep.
And I know exactly what I'm going to do day one, because I will know if it's a black sky event.
Yep.
Because I know what it looks like.
Here in a nutshell, right? If you wake up in the middle of the night and the power's off, like ours was on last Sunday, I went, oh no. Oh no. It was Wednesday. It wasn't a Sunday. It was Wednesday. And the first thing I did, I jumped out of bed and grabbed this, and it woke up. I was like, thank God. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Power outage I can deal with. If that didn't turn on, that means you got EMP'd. Right. And so thinking ahead of time.
Very, very highly likely.
Yep. So that's another thing. So as we said at the beginning of the show, I'm launching my own podcast, Bjorn.co, online. And it is a video service. It's free. I'm not going to charge anybody for anything. And it's very much like that scene in Iron Man when Tony Stark, his dad, he's watching a movie on his dad or a video about his dad about the place that they were building, and he said, Tony, I'm now talking to you, you know, I'm going to do that for my kids, but I'm going to make it public. and just saying things like, if I could go back and be 18 and get the advice I know now to myself, unfiltered, unscripted, just, dude, this is what it is, you know, straight no chaser. Right. That's what that's going to be about. But one of the other ones, a subset of that blog, is another website I own called emp4x4.com. So emp4x4.com. And that is a podcast where I'm going to be showing everybody the restoration I did on my 1983 diesel 4x4 Suburban that I did an engine swap for effectively a Humvee drivetrain with a 15 PSI turbo on it, intercooler, and I redid the entire electrical system, and I recorded myself on my phone doing it so that you can see why a truck can be made EMP, which ones can and cannot, and why you'd need to have that, because in an EMP event, if you don't have wheels, you now have a very different fight on your hands. But if you've got wheels in that first 72 hours, really, you have logistics. Yeah. If you have logistics, yeah, your chances of survival go up tenfold. So,
yeah.
But that's a topic for another day. But that's also coming out.
It also brings up a topic. If anybody's looking for EMP protection for their home, vehicle, business, go to empshield.com, empshield.com. Use CDR as the discount code, and you'll get $50 off per device. So empshield.com
or
CDR
or
as a use, code.
Or you can use mine, EMP4x4 for $50 off. Talk to Tim also. He's like, yeah, you got one. Okay, cool. So I actually, one of the things I'm going to be putting an EMP shield on my wife's Toyota TRD Sport Sequoia, right? So I've got my lifted, you know, Dukes of Hazzard style Suburban, and then my wife's got like the mom version. Hers is lifted too, and it's pretty rad. I'm not going to lie, but putting both of those on that channel. But yeah, tell Tim hi.
Will do.
But yeah, I think, you know, to your point, you know, building community and awareness is what the only real tool we can do right now. And to your, you know, I would argue to your point, the more families that you can get the attention of and say like, no, I'm here for you, right? We're here. I'm your brother, you know, help me understand how, you know, our family can be helpful for yours. The real key to everything is love, right? If you can understand the other side of the chessboard and figure out, oh yeah, I can see that would be a problem for your country. I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, I'm only being made aware of this now, you know, like how can we come together as humanity, not as big government people screaming at each other or using propaganda to try and sway people's votes and all that kind of stuff. Like, but no, just like me to you, right? And encourage dialogue. You know, the best way to fight is to just not have one, you know? And that's the right, U.S. is going to go through a correction that none of us are at all prepared for. But, you know, to your point, you know, talking to a friend and saying like, here, you know, I have the truck in my driveway with a Bennington flag and a don't tread on me inside the garage, right? And when people go, oh, I've been taught that the don't tread on me Gadsden flag is a racist neo-Nazi symbol. I'm like, then you don't know history.
it's because you're ignorant.
Yeah, it's the world's first and arguably only true human rights flag. It means I love you as a sister or brother, and I will defend you if the need arises. You are free to speak your mind, share your opinion, have your own religion, have your own faith and belief system and all that kind of stuff, and I will defend you for that. How is that racist? It's like the dumbest concept I've ever heard of.
Well, you know? That's Marxism coming to play in our society. Yeah. Marxism uses all these buzzwords and turns everything that's good and right into things that are bad and evil. And it's good is bad and bad is good. Black is white. White is black. Everything is upside down. It's communism. It's their tactic. Recently I was listening to a video of some guys who grew up in the Czech Republic during the Soviet domination. Yep. And they listed out the buzzwords that we're hearing today. He says, this is an old guy. I mean, I'm old, 64 years old. This guy is older than me. All right. He was saying this stuff, it's nothing new. The communists did that all back in, you know, in his youth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whenever you hear these things that are trying to divide and classify somebody as something else, you know, just like patriot groups.
No,
they're
sure.
Right-wing extremists. They're terrorists. That's bull. That's the left trying to turn the good guys into bad guys and convincing you, the audience, you, that what you thought first was wrong and what they are telling you is right. So just flip the script and go, wait a minute, why is this person, or why is this organization, or this group, or these politicians, why are they saying this all of a sudden? Why are cops bad, but criminals are good? Why is it that cops spend all day long putting their life on the line in defense of you and everybody else in the neighborhood to throw somebody in jail? And that guy doesn't even get charged because he gets released by the corrupt official who's the prosecutor. Why is that? That's the communists have taken over, even at the local level in your town, as well as mine and Bjorn's.
Well, yeah. Yeah, what you're talking about is true and crazy dangerous. So I made a diagram. Seven years ago, I guess it was, I was working in sentiment analysis, which is a fancy word for a big tech data mining system that grabs all information from what's called the fire hose data feed from all your social IST online networking platforms. Note the use of IST. So The purpose of that is if you're using a communication platform, I'm not going to name names so we don't have any lawsuits coming at us, but let's just say the top, you know, five that just popped in your head, right? When you use it, you think you are sharing your opinion with your friends, right? And you're going to get their feedback, or just share an event, or your kid was born, or whatever it is, you know, some event, or maybe, God forbid, you have a political opinion. And what that does is, in the words that you use, right, there are things to look for those. So the way that it works
algorithms
is...
algorithms that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm doing right now, so there's a million of me, right, texting our ideas into this system, and that goes into what's called the fire hose, right? It's the fire hose of data. Now, there, we just presume that their business model, they being the platform, is to then send us advertisements for things we might want to buy. And then, you know, they get paid by the advertising company in the hopes that we'll buy that thing. Because that's how traditional marketing and media was done on television, right? That's why every other ad is for Lunesta or something like that. You know, whatever. I just picked that word out. I don't know. I don't even know if that's a thing. You know, it's just whatever. It's some sort of thing that they're using, right? Mm-hmm. So we assumed... You know, I had assumed before actually seeing under the curtain that was all it was, right? It's an opinion sharing entity that you then have connectivity. You can share and connect with your friends, right? And that's what people use it for.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't know is that the real business model is that those platforms sell access to that fire hose data stream to data mining companies. This is how data mines work.
And the government.
So they tap that data feed, and they have algorithms and filters that are looking for what are called keywords, right? So if in my thing I say somebody's name and then a word that is an opinion connected to that name and then a conclusion and an action or something like that, that all goes into these algorithms that then look and put those things together to determine if it is, and they score it according to the different mechanisms they're using to score it, and then they feed that. Not only one, it was designed for the advertising, right? That was the point, right? They could say this has a high probability of this person wanting to buy, you know, a new wetsuit for surfing. I don't know, make it up. well, somebody else figured out, well, I can now understand the sentiment and the political ideas that this person is sharing. And so if I am a big entity or a big bank or an adversarial country that has anti-democratic, you know, totalitarianism is my motive and my agenda, I can take those conversations and then do something very interesting with them. I can take that and filter them into the, they support my agenda or they hurt my agenda, right? If I'm a totalitarian, again, playing the other side of the chessboard, I will take the ones that support socialism and, to your credit, you know, flipping things upside down where logic is illogical, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever. And then anybody who has conventional, traditional values of like, hey, I'm just a dad with kids and I just want to do well for the kiddos, you know, I'm going to demonize that guy, right? And send his stuff or hers into one group of algorithms, which then sends it to bots and also what we used to nickname meat puppet factories, where you have low paid slave labor texting and agreeing with these things and or then adding inflammatory things to the comments and then saying, hey, we need to build a, you know, militia, you said earlier or whatever, from a fake avatar account that the person doesn't exist.
Right.
And then that gets fed back into the system, right, in order to amplify the severity of the negative messaging. And then they put in a whole bunch of other hashtags and cash tags and keywords to then trip all the algorithmic intake symbols or signals for the intelligence community. So now you've got the whole, you know, they're going off to the, you know, false positives, right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the stuff I want to have happen in the, that supports a totalitarian agenda, well, now that gets flowery and wonderful language and supporting, and then they put little videos together that show how socialism is great and you'll own nothing and be happy, you know?
Right.
And they leave out the or else part, I think.
Yeah. But yeah.
They feed that back into the other influencers who they're paying to present their insane stuff. And now it takes off and you've steered the entire demographic that's following these influencers, right? That's what they are. And then it further amplifies. It's how you create dual echo chambers that support what you want and discredit the ones you don't. And I would make the easy argument that that's how you can weaponize the judicial system against the good guys, like to your point, and then let off the people who are doing the actual damage scot-free.
Yep.
It's pretty simple.
Yep.
But like, where's that conversation in today's public? So just holding
It hasn't gotten to that far yet, but it has in the ballot box. There's been quite a few of those corrupt officials have been voted out of office recently. So, and that opens up another show.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. The voter integrity. So, we're getting pretty close out of time. Do you have any final comments you want to make before we hit the end button?
Yeah, I got I have another thought here. It's going to be a real short one, but circling back to how you can take direct action at the grassroots level, right, in your community, and then get the ear of the officials who, if you're just one guy, they're not going to pay attention. But if it's like 500 people descending upon their office saying, time out, we need a backup plan for this community right now. We need energy, water, food, power, communication, education, logistics, and all that stuff down the line. I want to present a technology platform that solves the water part, right? Which then solves your food part. And the concept that I'm bringing in to the through the NDRC, the National Disaster Resilience Council, is that the Achilles heel we have in this country is that our infrastructure is centralized and big and expensive and old, right? I mean, you see it everywhere, bridges, highways, power systems, water, you know, reclamation parts. And by the way, out here in the West, like the aquifers are dying. So no matter what you invest in your water production facilities, there won't be any water for you to pump in the first place. And now you're out. So the technology that I was one of the co-founders of is a company called Molecule USA Inc. You can find it at molecule.us. And that company has developed a solution to the world's water problem by having the most effective and efficient method to concentrate atmospheric humidity into a new source of water. Now, that's important because now you've decentralized and distributed your water system, right? And we're making units, it's designed for the defense industry. It's, we're making units for ground troops and forces. It's perfect for SOCOM. So if you're SOCOM, hit me up. I will tell you all about it. It's light, it's fast, it's nimble. It allows you to refill your water in seconds. Each box can serve an entire platoon indefinitely. It's got a 3-year warranty, all that kind of stuff. And it's a lot, it's 90% cheaper than what you're doing now anyway. So give me a shot on that one. The point being though, is that that tech, what I'm pushing for right now is support from local communities and governments and resilience communities and through the resilience councils and all that kind of stuff. That tech can be miniaturized, but it can also grow, right? And it can grow to service your building. So one of the things that we need to do from a country is protect ourselves from asymmetric warfare, as described quite nicely in this book right here, Unrestricted Warfare by the Chinese Colonels, right? Because this is what they're doing to us. Yeah. And that tech can produce the concept of a water grid, right? So networking your house to your community neighborhood, mine to mine, the schools, civic buildings, police stations, fire stations can produce their own water, meaning they can become, in the short term,
self-sufficient.
Yes, right. They can they can become the water refill stations for like a FEMA disaster event, right?
Right.
They can also then take that same tech and now for the schools, for example, right, in the whole, you know, rust belt, for lack of a nicer term, they have rusting pipes and lead pipes, right? And so the schools, to fix their water problem, just put these things up on the roof of the gymnasium and they'll produce enough water for taking your entire school's drinking fountains into a pure, sustainable source of drinking water, right? So if we start there at the local levels, we can make our communities resilient, water first, and then food, and then everything else, and take back the power to put it into the people's hands to say, like, we're cool. We've got our own energy. We've got our own water. We've got our own food. We've got our own, you know, communications and stuff. And that, to your point, needs to be grassroots. So that's my final thought to really push onto.
Great. And it is, the key is grassroots. Yeah. And that's why we push this concept of civil defense, because what he's talking about fits right in with civil defense, because everything you can think of is civil defense.
Yeah.
You know, the blizzard hits and you got people out there with the snow blowers. Well, guess what? Those are civil defense workers with civil defense snow blowers, you know, chainsaws, whatever, you know, people coming together to help out their neighbors and friends. And, you know, it's just the way America has always been. It's never been a neighbor against neighbor. It's always been neighbor with neighbor. And that's how we're going to move forward and survive. Otherwise, it doesn't bode well for this nation, especially if those adversaries that are on the other side, they get their way, because we're going to be enslaved and it won't be America as we know it. There's a lot of people out there that think it can never happen here. Well, COVID happened. So you better readjust your idea about how things can really happen, because I've got some things that I'm privy to, and you probably would say that I should be wearing a tinfoil hat, but let me tell you, history will prove me right. So anyways, Bjorn, it was good having another conversation with you and finally getting to see you, you know, usually it's just on the phone, but this time, you know, it's face to face so much. It was a pleasure. And, everybody, I'm going to have all this stuff in the show notes, but remember, the podcast apps don't allow a whole lot of information. So please go to civildefenseradio.com and check out our posts under podcast, and you will see the complete list of items in the show notes. And that's the place to go and get all that stuff for past shows as well. That's where everything is listed. That's where you're going to get all the information. And there's some good links there as well. So it's been a pleasure. And thank you. And goodbye.